Hello and welcome to our first session for 2025. It has been an interesting time since we last spoke to Adrian Pask. He was just giving us a look back at 2024 and some of the things that we were expecting in 2025. And now 2025 is here. So for today, we say hello and welcome to our expectations for 2025 discussion that is sponsored by PSG Wealth. Looking ahead to 2025, we dive into expert predictions for markets and economies, highlighting key trends and risks. We're going to be discovering strategies to navigate uncertainty with insights on how to position your investments for growth and stability in the year ahead. My name is Buliwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and I'm going to be your host for what looks to be a great conversation. And joining me is Adrian Pask, who is the Chief Investment Officer of PSG Wealth. Adrian, greetings to you for the first time in 2025.
Hello, Madiwa, and hello to everybody listening in. It's good to be in the new year.
Adrian, let's just get into what are your expectations for markets for this year. A lot has transpired through 2024. We're now in 2025. And a lot has even transpired since our last conversation where you were giving us your expectations on what the year was going to be in this year. A lot of that was premised around Donald Trump taking back the office of president in the United States. That inauguration has happened, and we've already seen a lot of pen action. That's what I'm going to call it ever since then. But outside of that, what are your expectations for the year?
Yeah, I think pen action is a good one. On the back of that, some volatility this year, I think things are going to be very interesting. But that being said, if we just focus on the numbers and the fundamentals, the good news is that most asset classes are cheap relative to their historic norms. So that's always a good starting point. You know, if we look at some of the specifics, you know, cash yields are still quite high. I mean, locally, you know, rates over the last year, you've returned more or less 9% out of very conservative investment, and inflation is now between 3 and 4%. So if you can generate a 6% real return out of the most conservative asset classes, that's pretty good going. And if we look at what bonds did last year, that was really on the back of interest rate cuts, but also some sentiment improving. So a really good year for bonds. But we think there's actually some more room to go. Sentiment hasn't recovered in full and interest rates haven't bottomed. So if that continues, and I think given where the inflation print's coming out, as it seems like inflation is continuing to marginally move lower on a longer trend. So I think that's positive. I think the market seems to be expecting, you know, more or less 225 basis points cuts this year. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more than that. We're desperate for growth and inflation numbers are low. So that would be very positive. And like I said, it's not currently in market pricing. If that situation does take place, we'll see bonds appreciate further on the capital side, but they're already yielding north of 9% on the yield side alone. So a double-digit growth from bonds seems likely to our minds, which, again, if you compare that to inflation, all of a sudden you're getting equity-like returns out of your bonds. But that being said, we wouldn't want to position a portfolio just into fixed income, because if you look where there's still lingering value, you've got sectors like the listed equity space in South Africa, still very cheap, but it's still yielding north of 9%. You've got an inflation protection mechanism there because all the earnings are linked to prices in the real economy. A fair portion of that would be dividends coming through, which is a bit more tax efficient. And at the same time, listed property, to our minds, also has some further way to go. So I think on that front, it looks good. I mean, the pain point has always been looking offshore and specifically into US markets. But if we look at global equity markets on aggregate and even world bonds, there still seems to be some value, but you definitely have to be quite specific there. Our major concern would be the US, both on the fixed income and on the equity side. On the fixed income side, it's likely that we see inflation that's sticky, and rate expectations for lower rates are diminishing. So probably more conservative in policy. That being said, I've got absolutely no doubt that Trump is going to push quite hard for lower rates because, one, he's pro-growth. And secondly, the funding cost for the fiscus in the US is extremely poor at the moment. They're leaking a lot of money, about $1 trillion a year that they're spending just on their funding costs. And that's because bond yields are so high. And the only way to get that down is either to spend less, which is not really his prerogative, or is to bring interest rates down. So he's going to definitely display some of that fiscus pressure onto the Fed. But let's see how successful he is. In previous instances, he created a lot of turbulence. You'll recall from the previous term in 2016, he tried something similar, created a lot of volatility, but not necessarily a lot of success in bringing rates down. They do stand reasonably independently. So, like I say, I think broadly, however, plenty of opportunities to look around, and there's actually investors have the luxury of picking. You're not being forced into one or two asset classes that are cheap and the others are overly expensive. Diversification comes in quite cheap. And if you do end up in an asset class that's maybe not the top performing one, you're likely to still get a reasonable return out of that asset class. So it actually looks quite positive to our minds.
It's always good when we can start the year off on a positive note or with positive expectations on the horizon about what's going to happen in the year. And to your point just now, that positivity being expected in more than one asset class also gives investors options, which are always great, but it also means that overall the market picture, you know, stands to be in a more positive place outside of where people can actually place their money, you know, which would be the investments, whether that's fixed income or in the equity space. We do need to spend a little bit of time, Adrian, talking about the economy and, you know, some of the macro and micro factors that actually will be driving some of this positivity that we highlight in the market. So as far as you can see, where do you see economies and economic growth sort of flowing towards?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we've sort of paid our taxes in advance in South Africa, it feels, metaphorically speaking, because we took all the pain of not well thought through regulation proposals that impeded sentiment towards South Africa. If you think about Eskom, if you think about Transnet, grey listings, rating downgrades, all those things have hampered the country's brand and ultimately keeping investors at bay. And also leading to significant lost opportunities in the economy. A lot of potential economic growth went to the wayside just because of wasteful thinking and implementation. Where we are now, however, is on a very low base, and the ratings agencies are being a lot more positive in their communication towards South Africa. We're making inroads on the grey listing. Eskom all of a sudden seems like a forgotten problem, although there's still some risk on that one, but far less than what we had last year or the years before that. So I think things are moving in the right direction. And even though most economists are expecting growth, but fairly pedestrian, we're talking 1.5 to 2.5 kind of growth, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more than that. We should remember all the investment that took place through the corporate side, where people have made themselves a bit less dependent on Eskom. But also what they've done is put up the income statement to be a lot more efficient from an operating margin perspective, because they no longer spend as much money on electricity, even when they do have it. And those kind of things start to factor in as well. So I think we've got upside risk in South Africa. Things can be a lot more positive. If we look abroad, a very mixed picture. So China feels like a bit of a binary one. Things can get very, very ugly given the still lingering issue around the property sector. But at the same time, they can very, very easily come out and surprise everybody with significant stimulus, especially so if there's additional pressure from Trump that's pushing that economy even further down. They might blink and introduce more stimulus on that front. So I think you've got to think carefully about that one. Europe seems to be recovering, although very slowly. They're very dependent on Germany to solve its issues. But I mean, what they are dealing with is just stagnation, luckily not recession. And we've got to see whether they can turn that around. But it's a similar scenario to where South Africa is, just prolonged period of no growth. And it does set a low base. So if you can just get your inflation numbers down, then already you sit in a situation where your real growth that you report will start to pick up. So that remains important. But also a lot of talk around further monetary policy stimulus in that area as well. So cautiously optimistic about the European space. I think the one that we haven't talked about from a pure economic growth perspective is the US. Obviously, I've touched on the topics around the fiscus, but growth is still actually quite robust. And, you know, on the one side of me, we know that things are cyclical in nature and many of the data points are at cyclical highs, and you would expect that to turn. But, you know, as to what exactly will trigger that is very difficult to see. So there's still a possibility that the US growth still ticks over reasonably okay. I don't think we should expect massive growth numbers to all of a sudden come out of nowhere because of cost savings through, you know, all the different things that have been done or being planned to be done. But you can probably still see growth come in at around the 2% or so. But that is extremely dependent on the US consumer. And like I mentioned before, they are facing some challenges. So I think we're a bit more negative on that one. And there's definitely a risk there. But when it comes to economic growth, you know, you should almost put a cautionary out there. You don't position portfolios based on where you see the economy is going necessarily, because economic growth is also cyclical and recessions do happen. It doesn't make investment a bad investment. Often it makes good investments just cheaper. And that's more the mindset. You know, we've been preparing our shortlist for buying companies in the US that hopefully becomes cheaper if they do find or run into a blip. And currently they're good quality businesses, but just outside of our valuation framework. But if they do become cheaper, then that could actually provide us with the opportunity. So we're patiently waiting on that front.
There's a lot of positivity that you've highlighted, Adrian, in everything that you're talking about on the economic front. And like you said, the picture is a good one, at least from an expectations point of view. And even when we have an expectation of 1.5 to 2.5%, I guess in nominal terms, that would be double what would have been done in the previous year if we say that South Africa achieved, you know, let's say 1 to 1.1% of growth. If we're able to get to even 2%, that would be, I guess some people would say phenomenal, of course, off low base. But when it comes to risks, you had already highlighted a couple of the possible risks along the way. But do you have any other risks, you know, to the view that you perhaps want to highlight, just so that people don't get too caught up in possible euphoria about how things could be in 2025?
Yeah, I can maybe try to link that last comment, also answering the question is, if you look at risks, for example, our view is that if you think back to all the reporting that took place, that the economy is losing at least 5% of GDP because of Transnet and because of Eskom alone, those kind of reports that came out. So if those issues are solved, there's no reason to believe that, you know, you would rebound. So from that perspective, 1 or 2% seems conservative. Maybe we surprised with a 5 or north of 5%. You know, it sounds completely unimaginable at the moment, but I think we shouldn't be scared to be optimistic around a recovery that surpasses general market consensus. But at the same time, we do face risks. So a lot of this hinges on where our interest rates are going. And currently we think where inflation numbers are, interest rates can surprise by going lower a little bit quicker than what the market is currently predicting, which is for incremental moves very, very slowly, maybe two cuts of 25 basis points for the year. That's where the market is. And we're sort of thinking, you know what, I think if you were to think of it, is the risk of positive surprises bigger than negative surprises, i.e. there would be more rate cuts as opposed to less? We're definitely in the camp of thinking that the risk is to the upside. So in other words, you know, rates come down even further than what the market is currently thinking, and that will be enormously positive. But if that doesn't materialize and we do get stuck into a environment where inflation's low, but they don't want to cut rates, it could get quite ugly, because if that continues and inflation continues to go lower, you might actually end up in a space where you actually sit with deflation. And that could be very, very bad for sentiment across real asset classes. And the other material risk is probably the dollar. Our portfolios are positioned for a weaker dollar. The dollar is just unrealistically strong for what the fundamentals show. So our thinking is that Even if it does weaken, the portfolios will still benefit. We do have some offshore assets there, but that's not what we see as the key drivers for our portfolios in terms of good alpha opportunities. But if the dollar materially strengthens from here, which we don't think is likely, but if it does, that's one risk. And like I said, the big risk still for South Africa is inflation to return, but we think that risk is quite remote, given that we're actually fixing supply constraints and demand, as we know, the consumer is under enormous pressure at the moment. So those would be the risks. But ultimately, you know, over a one-year period, anything can happen and politicians can surprise us. And that's why we prefer to focus on the valuations. And like I said, if we look at where the majority of asset classes are, yes, valuations don't matter all that much over a one-year period, but over longer periods, they are probably the most important driver.
As we come to the end of the discussion, Adrian, it is good to then reflect on how investors should be positioning themselves right now. When you were talking about the risks just now, I think the one that really stuck out to me is the one around the US dollar, because the US dollar has had quite a run. I remember a couple of weeks ago when the Rand broke through the 19 Rand to the dollar mark for the first time in a couple of months. And that sort of showed you that, you know, US dollar strength has actually been running quite a bit. And we all know what tends to happen sometimes when a certain market, a certain item has too much steam in it. And this, in this particular case, the dollar. When there's too much steam in it, at some point you have to let some of that, you know, steam out of the system. And one wonders what level of weakening will actually happen for it to be more fairly valued. And I guess against all of that, how investors should be, you know, positioning themselves just so that they can win along the way. You did mention earlier on that a portfolio can't be positioned in just one asset class. You were talking about fixed income earlier on. So for this year, how should investors be positioning themselves for all the various things that we've spoken about today?
Yeah, I think on the one side, we know that US valuations are extreme. And if there's a sell-off in US markets, then other markets will feel the pain as well. So it's very easy to fall into a trap of where you wait for a pullback. But that same argument could have been followed over the last 4 years and you would have missed out. And the simple truth is that no one really knows what's going to happen over a 12-month period. So I think it's important to remain positive, and the valuations look attractive. So you're okay from that perspective. And if they do sell off, you can have an opportunity of upweighting your position. A recession will be temporary, a market sell-off will be temporary, and things will recover. But also just to shield against that a bit, because typically investors do make mistakes. It's easy to say we're going to be invested and stay invested until the market sells off 30% and then people start to panic and then they miss the recovery. So I think you need to maintain that diversified portfolio just purely to for your own peace of mind. But I think, you know, the diversification thing is so often mentioned, it's sort of become a bit of a cliche. But I think where it really has a lot of value, especially in a year like this one, is the volatility side of things, to manage that a bit better. I mean, even for us, even though we're not massively positive on US assets, we still have some offshore assets, because the currency, when it weakens in a drama, it does help the other part of the portfolio. So I think that helps. But we don't want lazy assets in the portfolio. So you must still have enough conviction in the things that you like to allocate assertively into those areas and be patient. I think that's really important. But the biggest blessing of diversification at the moment is that even if you do get this marginally wrong, which is always a possibility for any investor, like I said, even if you invest in overly conservative assets, you're still getting a decent yield on that. I think you might face an opportunity cost, but most assets are likely to perform reasonably well on the medium term. So, you know, it's not like that diversification comes at a huge expense where you need to push the portfolios into areas where you would really actually not like to support, but you need it from a risk perspective. At this stage, you know, you're getting other exposure into other areas and you're actually getting it with a reasonable return prospect as well. So, you know, you can be quite optimistic about the outcome for the portfolio and be quite comfortable with the risk positioning at the same time. So it's not the time to be scared to diversify or be allergic to diversification, it's a good time to be positive. But remember that the diversification argument is always.
It's a good time to be positive, and diversification remains the message. Those are the words of Adrian Pask, who is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth, giving us some insight into what to expect in 2025. Ending off talking about the fact that there's a lot that's going on, and diversification is probably going to be the best way to sort of weather anything that can happen this year, despite the fact that there's a lot of positivity that's currently in the markets and a lot of positive expectations. It's always good to have those safeguards in place. And he actually says that, you know, it is a boring piece of advice, but it is a steadfast and prudent piece of advice nonetheless. Also, just giving us some insight into what's been happening historically, because we're now entering what's going to be a very interesting year for the global economy. A lot of people looking back at the first Trump presidency, trying to predict what's going to happen in his second presidency, because a lot of that is going to have an influence on what's happening on the equities side of things, but also monetary policy. Adrian saying that he thinks Trump is going to push for rates to go lower because of those funding costs that they are talking about. And at the moment, Trump doesn't look like the type of person who's going to be trying to be austere from that point of view. Also giving some insight into economies, you know, to say that things are looking good, albeit in South Africa off of a low base, but there's positivity. One of the things that he does say is that the expectation is for 1.5 to 2.5% growth in South Africa, but it's very possible that we might find ourselves achieving an even higher number than that, which would be good for everyone involved. So that's where we end off for today, looking at our discussion around expectations for 2025. Thank you so much, Adrian, for being with us today.
Thanks, Madiwa, and thank you for the guys listening in.
All right. So I've been your host, Mliwa Kabaza, of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on iono.fm, Spotify, Play.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.